We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Stand by for news.
News on the mark.
Newsroom in New York.
You have tuned in turn on the news, the weekly newscast from the radio network, with all the radio coverage of the radio. Now with computerized news readers, with fewer meddling humans, and more aggregated reporting and automated music. Tune in turn on the news each week for the latest news, radio art, and more from our robot reporters, making sure you hear both sides, good and evil, every time you turn on the news.
And then I just, there's good news. Good evening.
January 6th, 2021. Juneteenth for Trump supporters. The day when white people visited the Democracy Store and demanded to speak to the manager.
I've seen it before. I've seen it all before.
That was another time, Mr. Gantz. Another place. Another kind of people. That doesn't go here.
That's what we said, too. They were brown scum. Temporary insanity. Part of the passing scene. Too monstrous to be real. So, we ignored them. Or laughed at them. Because we couldn't believe that there were enough insane people to walk alongside of them. Then one morning, the country woke up from an uneasy sleep, and there was no more laughter.
The mob turning on police and spraying them with mace. This officer was trapped, pinned by a metal door and screaming for help that didn't come.
March on the Capitol today.
We are gonna take our country back.
We're coming for you, and we're gonna have a good time doing it.
Let's go do some crimes. So, let's have trial by combat.
I demand trial by combat.
You'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength. We're going to walk down and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to the Capitol and we're going to try and give. You know, the Democrats are hopeless. They're never voting for anything. Not even one vote. But we're going to try and give our Republicans, the weak ones, because the strong ones don't need any of our help. We're going to try and give them the kind of pride and boldness that they need to take back our country. So let's walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. I want to thank you all. God bless you and God bless America.
Bye bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye bye.
I have never seen anything like this.
That was one of the wildest things I've ever seen, Andrea. One of the wildest things that I've ever seen.
The December 18th meeting in the Oval Office. Let's recap for a moment. You've got Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, Mike Flynn getting in from a junior staffer for a meeting with the president. As Sidney Powell testified, Pat Cipollone breaking all land speed efforts, maybe 15 minutes later getting in with Eric Kirschman, Derek Lyons, other parts of the legitimate White House staff. And Cipollone saying to, you know, some of these people, you know, I guess it was to Patrick Burke, you know, who are you and what are you doing in here? And then the president saying that they're giving him solutions and you're not. And the cursing, the shouting. Rudy Giuliani sitting alone in the cabinet room and saying he thought that was kind of cool. And then Mark Meadows, you know, being designated to walk him out down the path and make sure he didn't sneak back into the residence. And this was in the Oval Office of the White House with the President of the United States and him then turning to Sidney Powell after they had pointed out that 60-plus federal judges, many appointed by Donald Trump, had ruled against her and them, and that she was being appointed a special counsel with security clearances in her
mind, Eric Kirschman
and in the president's.
Saying to her, you think all of those 60 judges that ruled against you were all corrupt, every single one of them, even the ones that the Donald Trump administration appointed.
The committee detailed a very heated and profane Oval Office showdown between White House attorneys and outside Trump advisors pushing baseless claims of election fraud.
Give it to me.
No, it's mine.
Give me that world herring or I'll marinate you. Let me have it! My world. You nitwit, you shattered my world!
Give out!
You shattered my world!
We took you into the room for a very bizarre meeting in the White House where you saw that there were a set of outside advisors, not government officials, who were kind of battling with the White House counsel and others who are White House staff over dangerous and possibly unconstitutional ideas.
Into the room with your pencil in your hand.
I opened the door and I walked in. I saw General Flynn.
You see somebody naked and you say, who is that man?
I saw Sidney Powell sitting there. I don't think any of these people were providing the president with good advice.
You try so hard, but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home. Because something is happening here, but you don't know what it is.
Was the meeting tense?
Oh, yeah. It was not a casual meeting. At times, there were people shouting at each other.
hurling insults at each other.
Cipollone and Hirschman and whoever the other guy was showed nothing but contempt and disdain of the president.
The three of them were really sort of forcefully attacking me verbally.
I think that it got to the point where the screaming was completely, completely out there. I mean, you got people walk in, it was late at night, it had been a long day, and what they were proposing, I thought was nuts.
I thought that the president did not have the authority to do what was being suggested under a proper reading of the law. I conveyed that. Okay. I think I actually told somebody, you know, in the vice president's, just blame me. I think the vice president did the right thing. And we were pushing back and we were asking one simple question as a general matter. Where is the evidence? So
what response did you get when you asked Ms. Powell and her colleagues, where's the
evidence? A variety of responses based on my current recollection, including, you know, can't believe you would say something, like, you know, things like this, like, what do you mean, where's the evidence? You should know, you know, and things like that, or, you know. A disregard, I would say, a general disregard for the importance of actually backing up what you say with facts.
But we know from Eric Hirschman there's also a threat, you know, to Mike Flynn to get up and throw down at one point. Tell me more.
Trump for years had fantasized about using the Insurrection Act to exert his powers to the maximum extent because he had been told by lawyers he essentially could declare martial law if there was ever an insurrection. So it was very present in his mind that if such a scenario transpired, he might be able to exert additional presidential powers, and in this case, potentially delay handover of power to a new administration. To see text messages from Trump's own campaign manager, previous campaign manager, Brad Parscale, saying that this was akin to the president, you know, exhorting people towards a civil war. But we all know, Nicole, and we've talked about on this program, that Trump himself has talked about civil wars being afoot. And this has an impact, right? 65% of Southern Republicans today believe that their state should secede from the Union. This is having a very perverse, warped impact on our politics. And you can see how it instigated people to come storm the U.S. Capitol.
This text exchange between two very staunch Trump allies, Brad Parscale and Katrina Pearson. Watch what they said after the January 6th attack. Watch and listen.
Mr. Parscale said, quote, "This is about Trump pushing for uncertainty in our country, a sitting president asking for civil war." And then when he said, "This week I feel guilty for helping him win," Katrina Pearson responded, "You did what you felt right at the time, and therefore it was right." Mr. Parscale added, "Yeah, but a woman is dead. And yeah, if I was Trump and I knew my rhetoric killed someone." When Ms. Pearson replied, "It wasn't the rhetoric," Mr. Parscale said, "Katrina, yes, it was."
I think we need to quit mincing words and just talk about truths. And what it was going to be was an armed revolution. I mean, people died that day. Law enforcement officers died this day. There was a gallows set up in front of the Capitol. This could have been the spark that started a new civil war, and no one would have won there. That would have been good for no one.
East End was once a happy town where harmony and love was busting out at all the seams and in the trees above. The doves of peace were laying eggs. There were no signs of strife, for each man loved his neighbor and sometimes his neighbor's wife. But a sudden change soon come about. Storm clouds were in the sky. Nobody stopped to kiss a body coming through the rye. For each man eyed his neighbor with malice and with hate. Housewives no longer spilled the beans across the garden gate. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. It was sewer pipes versus slop pails. The town was split in two. With profane propaganda, the air was often blue. The sewer and water faction ran a sanitary plank. They said shallow wells and slop pails and toilets always stank. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. But those slop pailers were stubborn. They fought with tooth and nail. They said our nitwit council should be languishing in jail. They told how high taxation and plumbers' union fees would throw us in the poorhouse and they'd throw away the keys. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. But when the vote was counted, the slop pailers met defeat. And then they started tearing up our quiet village street. Now peace and harmony once more replaced the grapes of wrath. So when next you visit East End, just stop in and have a bath. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do.
Former Trump campaign manager Brad Parscale flat out said Trump's rhetoric got someone killed.
I think today was a devastating hearing, Wolf, for Trump. Every day in the hearing, in the series of hearings, has built on it. This hearing laid the blame, the committee laid the blame on Trump directly from White House insiders. Brad Parscale's a campaign insider. These are the people closest to him. And so what the committee has built is just a devastating case where Trump loyalists over and over again are the ones who are saying Trump was responsible and that, as Liz Cheney said in the first hearing, President Trump summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame. And that certainly underscored that today.
I want to start by asking if you agree, Mr. Cipollone, with the conclusions of Matt Morgan and Bill Barr, of all of the individuals who evaluated those claims, that there is no evidence of election fraud sufficient to undermine the outcome in particular state.
Yes, I agree with that. If your question is that I believe we should concede the election at a point in time, yes, I did.
December 14th was the day that the state certified their votes and sent them to Congress. And in my view, that was the end of the matter. I didn't see, I thought that this would lead inexorably to a new administration.
The efforts to overturn the election should have stopped once the litigation was complete.
In my view, upon the conclusion of litigation was when I began to plan for life after the administration.
I told him that I did believe, yes, that once those legal processes were run, if fraud had not been established, that had affected the outcome of the election, that unfortunately, I believe that what had to be done was concede the outcome.
A crush of evidence there shown by the January 6th Select Committee in their public hearing today. Of all of the people around Donald Trump, it's hard to find anyone who disagreed with the consensus opinion that he had lost and he should concede.
Tell me more, tell me more.
I was pretty shocked at some of the text messages and communications they had that showed that Donald Trump had wanted to march to the Capitol and had wanted to keep this plan secret from a larger group of people. That to me was perhaps the most revelatory. I hadn't seen those text messages before. We knew that Donald Trump, it was known Donald Trump did want to go to the Capitol. Obviously, he commands the mob to go there on January 6th. But the fact that days ahead of time, key rally organizers are saying this is going to be an unexpected announcement and we can't spread this too widely and we can't let the National Park Police know. That added a level of sort of clandestine behavior that I think adds an extra layer onto what we already know about the way Trump was acting around January 6th, that he didn't want too many of his most sober advisors to know about what he was planning to do with the crowd, directing them to the Capitol. That was probably my largest takeaway.
Tell me more, tell me more.
It's clear that with the addition of Pat Cipollone's deposition, there is just a cascade or a crush of high-level White House officials testifying to what has been a theme through everything, that Trump lost, Trump was told he lost, his plot to overturn the election was illegal, Trump knew it was illegal. And today what was introduced was a real bulk of knowledge tying Trump to the extremists and their conduct. The committee is marshaling evidence to suggest that Donald Trump should be investigated as part of this seditious conspiracy. Do you think that's the case? And do you think he should be?
Yes and yes. And that was really what was so such a blockbuster element of Cassie Hutchinson's testimony, because it put him the important element for seditious conspiracy or inciting a riot is force. And so we had him all of a sudden, not simply was he aware or not, but actually fomenting it. On seditious conspiracy, I'm going to get legal and nerdy here, but you need an agreement. And it looks as if the actual action took place at the end of this remarkable meeting when he puts into action the call to arms of his supporters. Was there agreement preceding that with any of the ragtag Flynn Powell folks there? They haven't detailed it, but certainly it's something that is there that needs to be investigated now. And the other big ticket item that Hutchinson's testimony puts into play for him, inciting the riot, which is another very serious charge carrying a long penalty, that I think has been very strongly documented just with the testimony we've had to date. So prosecutors are hunched over to try to hear the agreement part, but otherwise the relationship between Trump and the violence took a huge turn as of Hutchinson's testimony, and it continued today as with different elements showing this is just what he wanted to happen, indeed, just what he was orchestrating.
What they did at the end was tantalize us with next week, because what they said was, look, Pat Cipollone has come and sat with us for a long time. He's going to take us through the 181 minutes. The committee said they were going to go minute by minute while Donald Trump was sitting on his hands on January 6th. You know, and he could have done any number of things, from calling the attorney general or the Department of Homeland Security. Evidently, Cipollone said he did none of those things, zero. So we're going to start, I think, hearing about that next week. And then there's the tantalizing thing, which you said, the bombshell at the very end, that Donald Trump himself personally called a witness who hasn't been publicly identified yet to the committee.
After our last hearing, President Trump tried to call a witness in our investigation, a witness you have not yet seen in these hearings. That person declined to answer or respond to President Trump's call, and instead alerted their lawyer to the call. Their lawyer alerted us. And this committee has supplied that information to the Department of Justice. Let me say one more time, we will take any effort to influence witness testimony very seriously.
That's could be very serious witness tampering. I'm glad to see the Justice Department's already got the information. I suspect Donald Trump's defense is, hey, I didn't know she was going to be a witness or he was going to be a witness. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not that can hold up, you know, there's probably parties to conversations, including this witness's own lawyer, yeah, who may have been able to tell Trump. But that's going to play out. That could be a very easy criminal case if the evidence is the way that Congresswoman Cheney suggested it might be.
A very easy criminal case for the Justice Department to bring against Donald Trump?
Yes.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yes, because, witness tampering is pretty much, it's a pretty simple test. It's mm-hmm. not the kind of thing in which you have presidential prerogatives. You know, mm-hmm. this is Trump acting now as a private citizen. He's not the president. There's no possible privilege claims or anything like mm-hmm. that. It's just simply, are you trying to prevent this person from coming forward to tell the truth? And do you have that mens rea? Is that your intent? If, depending on what that is, that could be pretty serious.
Thanks this week for the songs from Husker Du, The Clash, The Grease Soundtrack, Bob Dylan, and Brian DeWine. And thanks for the clips and excerpts from Trevor Noah, Twilight Zone, Robert Moore, Donald Trump Jr., Rudy Giuliani, Tyrion Lannister, Donald Trump, Miracle Max, Andrea Mitchell, Katie Turr, Wolf Blitzer, The Three Stooges, Pat Cipollone, Sidney Powell, Nicole Wallace, Jason Van Tatenhove, Bill Barr, Liz Cheney, Kaylee McEnany, Luke Broadwater, and Neil Katyal.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.